The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of its hosts, guests, or callers, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of WTBR-FM, its management, other producers, or sponsors.
Welcome to Beyond, an hour-long program of science fiction and fantasy. I am your host, Beverly Prentice. I hope you enjoy the program. If so, please drop a line to beyond3x5@gmail.com. My Sidekick, Jules, by Chris Neary. Clear! A voice called with urgent authority. Before I could wonder what that meant, an earthquake went off in my chest. Aftershocks convulsed me repeatedly, followed finally by the sound of relieved sighs. Then I awoke in such a dense fog I couldn't see a thing. Awake? Had I been sleeping? I stumbled through the fog. From somewhere a boy's voice called,
Mama?
He wasn't calling me. Brady and I had wanted kids, and it crushed us that they never came. We had once rescued a puppy called Jules, whom we loved dearly. And if you think it's wrong to love a dog like a child, you don't know anything. Unless what you know is that dogs leave too soon. After the disappointment of losing Jules, we buried ourselves in work. Brady in criminal law, and me, real estate. Now, our marriage was more like a habit that neither of us cared enough to break.
Mama, I declare you are as jumpy as a long-tailed polecat under a big old rocker.
See? If I'd had a kid, he wouldn't speak in that cornpone drawl. Funny that I didn't sense his appellation, Mom's presence in the fog. Equally strange, the voice seemed to echo inside my head, not outside. More confusion. The fog parted and I found myself on a bridge over a clear blue stream. The bridge's planks were painted in a variety of brilliant hues. Where was I? Not my home, Cottonwood, Arizona. The only body of water flowing through Cottonwood was the Verde River, and people called it the Dirty Verde. The Muddy Verde had never run this clear. I looked to where the bridge connected to a field. A dog stood there, bristling with excitement, a golden retriever, just like Jules. Finally, that drawling voice snapped.
Mama, Lucy. I'm talking to you.
Lucy? I'm Lucy? Jules? I considered the bridge's brilliant colors. The rainbow bridge, where they say pets who've passed on wait for their owners. I ran to what looked like a dog I'd lost years ago. How do you know you're dreaming? If your dead dog talks and you hear him telepathically between your ears, it's a good bet you are.
Mama, you look as tired as a hog wading through mud. Set a spell.
What language was that? I sat on the bridge with my legs dangling over the side. The way the planks dug into my thighs felt incredibly real. Some dream, huh? So, Jules, did you always talk like... What was I saying? He chuckled.
I never talk like some stall-fed dandy, I'll say that.
Where I come from, dogs don't talk at all.
All we dogs can always make chin-chatter. Just on your plan, we kind of hush it up. We nudge you humans toward where you should go.
The only place I remembered Joel's nudging me toward was the kitchen. He laughed.
Maybe I did sometimes.
Unreal. Not only was I expected to believe my dead dog talked, he also read my thoughts. So my being here means I'm dead?
Nobody pulled your pin yet. You're hovering between here and thereafter, but Mama, if you've come to me, you've kind of given up.
What could have brought me to this point? How?
Confused, huh?
Jules' rusted eyes beamed kindly at me.
Shot?
Who killed me? Who shot me? How was it possible that I didn't feel wounded?
The police don't know, Mama.
I still wasn't buying this, but I went along with Jules insisted we had to leave the Rainbow Bridge. We floated through town about 10 feet off the ground over people who didn't seem to notice us, all the way to the hospital. Outside, the sign read, Verde Valley Medical Center. That was Cottonwoods Hospital, where they'd take me if I had been shot. But if I were dreaming, I'd know that. My skepticism ebbed when we drifted into the ICU. My spirit hovered near the ceiling, looking down to where my body lay, as still as a stone. Jeez, now I was talking like my redneck canine. Suddenly I understood. This wasn't a dream, but a hallucination. No light at the end of the tunnel for me. My synapses fired out a full-blown scenario. In the waiting room, Mom pressed a soppy tissue to her eyes. Loads of friends had also gathered there, but not Brady. He and I had argued that morning. We rarely fought, but today I couldn't stand it anymore that we'd drifted so far apart. After a few angry remarks, Brady had slammed the door on his way out. I started toward the people who were there for me.
Mama, in your spirit state, you're like looking through a wire fence.
Did that mean invisible? I felt helpless, and that Brady hadn't come just devastated me. Even in my spirit state, my eyes stung. Without prompting, Jules said,
Don't give up on Daddy yet.
Had he given up on me? Jules took me to the Camp Verde jail where Brady met with his client, Nick Connors, in an attorney conference room. Nick was on trial for murdering his wife, Sherry, who had been a nurse at the same hospital where machines measured my warning vital signs. It was an unusual case. Sherry's body had never been found. But with so much of her DNA confirmed blood spilled in their home, the police decided she could not have survived such a significant blood loss. Since it was known to be a contentious marriage, they arrested Nick in record time.
Daddy's looks like his suit's at half-mast.
If that meant Brady looked like a wreck, he did. His eyes were red-rimmed, and his jacket appeared to have been rolled up and used as a pillow. He sat across from Nick, who was shackled to the table. The judge granted the continuance, Brady said. I know you want this trial over, but I need to be with Lucy.
Boy, howdy, does Daddy care?
Jules whispered. Maybe he did. Warmth spread through a spirit state that until now lacked temperature. How is Lucy? Nick asked. Brady started to shrug, but it turned more into a shudder. Listen, prisoners hear things. I'll ask around. Where did this gunshot take place? I needed to know, too. Brady offered Nick a grim smile. Somewhere you know very well. 8048 Iron Spring Lane. Nick's lip twisted into a sour line. Our house? Well, Sherry's. where we'd been happy maybe 2 months of the 4 years we lived there. Even now, Nick didn't hide how unhappy the marriage had been. Why was Lucy there? Your sister-in-law, Ginny, who inherited when Sherry was decided dead, is selling it, Brady said. Does Ginny ever come to see you? Nick's shackled hands picked at the grain of the table. Why would she? Ginny's not crazy like Sherry, but I am the man accused of murdering her sister. Then why did she give the house listing to the wife of your defense attorney? Nick shrugged. Though I couldn't remember the shooting or anything that happened in that house, the rest of my life was clear to me. I'd been as shocked as anyone when Sherry's sister offered me the listing. Since she'd seemed so hobbled by emotions, I had volunteered to find a workman who could replace the hardwood flooring in the kitchen, which had been soaked with Sherry's blood. Had I been there to check on the repairs when someone shot me? Maybe I simply interrupted a burglary. Brady glared sternly at his client. Nick, you're holding something back, maybe even outright lying. Nick sputtered. No, I swear. Beside me, Jules snorted. Well, I still heard him in my head, but I didn't know dogs could make that sound. The frustrated twist of Brady's lips said he didn't buy it either. I warn you, Nick, if something blows up during the trial, it might guarantee that guilty or not, you'll spend the rest of your life in here. Nick's face crumpled in despair, but he said nothing. As soon as we drifted up to it, I recognized the house I'd sold to Sherry. High on a windy bluff, partially built into the hillside. I'd never liked the home, but there's a buyer for every property. Sherry loved its isolation. It seemed she didn't like neighbors, but she almost backed out of the deal when she realized it didn't have a basement. Houses in Arizona almost never do, I said. But with a house built into the hillside, you could have a basement excavated. You mean go through the bother of having it done myself? She grunted at the absurdity of that idea, but she let the sale go through. She'd been a strange client, initially too friendly. She acted as if we were lifelong BFFs. Before long, nasty jabs started sneaking into conversations. Then she became outright vicious. When I told her I was firing her as a client, she promised to control the outburst if I'd keep her on. To my surprise, she did control her behavior. After the closing, thankfully, I never saw her again. When I heard she was marrying a nice guy, I presumed Nick Connors hadn't known her long. Jules and I drifted into the stark and sterile living room, where the one homey touch was an oval hand-woven cloth rug covering most of the floor. The rug contained two reddish stains. Was that where I was shot? Why two stains? In the kitchen, where an older blood stain covered a huge part of the maple flooring, I saw what the police meant when they related the enormity of Sherry's blood loss. No one who'd lost this much blood could have survived.
Someone sure fired off a snoot full of mad. That's a pickle.
Uh-huh. If being a pickle and bleeding out were the same thing. On the counter, I found my daybook, which I must have left there. I placed my hand on it. An unexpected feeling came over me. I wasn't alone here.
I reckon the flooring man came.
No, he assured me he would, yet nothing's been done on the floor. Maybe he never showed up. I placed my spirit hand back on the page. I'll sense I was here with someone else. I stared at the calendar entries. The time when I was supposed to meet the floor repairman was there, but above that it read, Shelter. R. R? I gasped. Riley. I picked up Riley at the animal shelter. She's a young Jack Russell Terrier.
You and Daddy were adopting another dog?
Jules sounded delighted. Oh, no, after losing you, we couldn't do that again. Couldn't risk... I just give different dogs an outing occasionally. Who knew I could still read dog expressions? Jules glowered angrily. We never wanted to take anything away from our love for you.
That's a child. The truth is a donkey is feathers. Shame on both of you. A life you give as much as you want to receive.
I longed for the time before Jules could talk. But I also thought that maybe Brady and I had become cowards. Chew me out later, okay? We have to find her. We searched the entire house with no luck. Only after we drifted out to the cold, windy yard did we find Riley. She lay still, though not yet dead, on a concrete path, which displayed a blood trail from where she'd pulled herself. The second blood stain on the rug? Jules went right into motion. He circled her with his spirit body.
I don't have much energy, but the little I have should warm her up.
He began licking her with his spirit tongue.
Mama, you need to get help.
How?
You have a mite of energy. Think hard, and you should be able to move small things.
Small things? What small things? I glanced around helplessly. Until out at the street, I spotted a mail carrier's jeep at the next house, some distance away. Might of energy, don't fail me now. The mail carrier was a paunchy guy talking on his cell phone to someone named Lois, while absently inserting mail in a box at the curb. I slipped past him into the jeep he drove. For a second, I thought he might have felt me when he glanced briefly in my direction. But he went back to grousing to Lois. I took a few envelopes from a bin on the seat, finding I could lift them easily. I carried them away, moving them, so it looked like they were floating on the breeze. Oh, no, the carrier cried. No, no, no. He shoved his phone in his pocket and ran after the envelopes. At one point, he paused and looked at the jeep, maybe thinking about going back for it. I made the envelopes move faster on that fictitious breeze, and he followed along. I led him all the way to Riley. I dropped the mail there. He didn't notice the envelopes anymore. Poor doggie. Are you okay, girl? He spotted the blood then, and after determining that Riley was still alive, placed a call to animal control. Help arrived, and Riley was whisked away to a vet. Part of me wanted to follow Riley, but I felt a sudden, stronger need to check in with my own body back at the hospital. The waiting room was less crowded now. Mom was still there, seated at the edge of a sofa. Jules jumped up next to her. The sight of them together tugged at my heart. My widowed mother and my dog had always enjoyed a special bond. She used to whisper secrets in his ears. I would have sworn he didn't whisper any back to her, but now, who could say? I drifted alone to where the machines performed my body's functions. Brady had fallen asleep in a chair beside the bed. Without knowing it was possible, I felt a need to connect my spirit to my body. Once my spirit slipped into my physical form, I sensed how lost I felt. Jules was right. I had given up. Brady took my hand. Don't leave me loose, he said with soft desperation. I don't know how we let it all go, but if you come back, I'll spend the rest of my life making us work. I stayed there long enough to understand that my body had heard him. When a nurse came in to check on me, my spirit self drifted out. In the waiting room, Jules still leaned close to Mom. An oddly peaceful expression had come over her face. I flicked a finger to tell him we were leaving.
Where to, Mama?
He looked at my mom again regretfully. Back to that house. I need to know what happened there. We stopped at the vet to determine that Riley was on the mend, then moved on to Sherry's house. Studying the living room more carefully now, I noticed a wide circular scratch on the floor. Riley was still a young dog, easily excited. I knew that from when I'd taken her to other houses. She became wild. I could see where the scratch that she might have made collided with that living room rug. Jules, can we move this rug?
Easy as a pup hopping over a worm.
Apparently his energies weren't as insignificant as he'd indicated. Jules managed to flip it aside with his nose. Beneath the rug was a trapdoor. It wasn't there when I showed Jerry the house. She must have had that constructed. But how to open it? I remembered the floors in that house were uneven. I returned to the kitchen and knocked a pen off my calendar. It rolled all the way to the trapdoor. Using the pen as a lever, together Jules and I lifted the door. The opening revealed the basement. Jules and I drifted down. So Sherry really did have a basement excavated, despite implying she wouldn't. On one side stood a messy workbench. I didn't stop to search it after seeing a body propped against it. The flooring man who was supposed to meet me there. I sensed he had moved past me, all the way to death. He must have been killed when he showed up and removed from the living room before I arrived. Would a burglar have done that? Would a burglar have stayed around long enough to shoot me? It was just my good fortune that, according to Jules, a distant neighbor heard the shots and called the police. I promised to find justice for the flooring man. And if he promised for someone not far from death herself, could I keep it? On the workbench, I found some printed emails scattered about, so I didn't need to waste energy moving any to read them. They were from Ginny, Sherry's sister, to Nick Connor. Nick had sworn that he and Ginny hadn't had any contact. According to the emails, however, they had been having an affair. When Nick asked Sherry for a divorce, she vowed to make them pay for betraying her. Nick must have decided that confirming their relationship would only make him seem more guilty and cast doubt on Ginny as well. I wasn't as sure about their innocence anymore. But Nick had been in jail when I was shot. Ginny wasn't. But what reason would she have had to shoot me or to kill the flooring man? Below the workbench was an under-counter refrigerator. When I opened it, I saw some bags of blood. Blood? It began coming together. Before I could follow the full chain of logic, a sudden fear overtook me. After having connected with my body at the hospital, now I sensed it was in jeopardy. I was. I looked at Jules. Being in tune with me, his doggy face crinkled in worry. Jules, we have to get back to the hospital now, or I'm going to die there. My redneck retriever had been holding out on me. We didn't drift there this time. We were simply there, right before the nurse's station, a few doors away from my room. The problem then was how to get the nurses to follow us. The bit with the flying envelopes had worked so well, I decided to repeat it with the paperwork on their desk. With all my worry, I must have summoned more energy. I sent papers every which way on the floor. Then, when nurses came after them, I blew a breath and sent them flying down the hall and finally under the door to my room. A cluster of nurses flew through the door, and once through, They found another woman in scrubs at my IV, injecting something into it. Sherry? One nurse asked. What? You're supposed to be dead. Another nurse didn't wait for any explanation. She yanked the contaminated IV connection from my arm. Brady, who must have followed the chaos down the hall, burst through the door. One look at Sherry and he immediately called the police. She tried to run away, but there were simply too many people there to stop her. Jules and I returned to the Rainbow Bridge, me with my legs over the side, him leaning against me. Am I going to die from whatever Sherry injected into me?
Your choice, Mama. Making that choice should be as easy as a gnat riding in a donkey's ear.
I smiled. I'm starting to understand you. Even in spirit form, I felt a tear trickle down my cheek. It wasn't easy at all. I don't want to lose you again, Jules. Should I stay with you?
Do you want to lose Daddy?
I remembered when Brady had begged me to come back to him. I shook my head no.
Mama, there's no sense of time here. Whether you slip off your horse now or later, it's the same.
The spirit tears kept coming. It didn't feel the same. I woke up 2 days later. Apparently there wasn't enough of whatever juice Sherry had shot into my IV to kill me. I remembered it all. But I understood it had just been a near-death experience. I grieved for the feeling of having lost Jules again. I came to learn that everything to do with Sherry really happened. She had been banking her blood in that fridge in the basement, banking enough money to start a new life, too. But first, she vowed to destroy Nick's life. She figured if she spilled enough blood, the police would conclude that Nick had killed her despite the lack of a body. He would spend the rest of his life in prison, and her sister would be denied the man she loved. I still didn't remember seeing her at the house, but she probably shot me when I did. One of the bullets she'd fired at me must have grazed Riley. Things didn't work out exactly as Sherry had planned. Now she was behind bars, charged with a workman's murder and my attempted murder. Nick was free, and he and Ginny were together. I just wasn't the one to bring it about, I knew. I had been unconscious at the hospital, after all. Brady and I felt good about our chance of making our marriage work this time, but given how it hurt to leave my hallucination behind, I told him I didn't want to hear about anything that really happened while I was unconscious. They released me 4 days later. Brady came into my room pushing a wheelchair. On the wheelchair sat a cardboard box. What's in the box, Brady? He put his finger up to his lips and said, "Shh, a surprise for you, but it's a secret. The hospital wouldn't want it here." His eyes twinkled happily. He helped me into the chair before placing the box on my lap. It was heavier than I expected. I looked into it. Riley, the little dog I imagined that Jules and I had saved in my hallucination, was there. Her sparkling gaze met mine. She's on the mend, too, after getting grazed by a bullet and losing blood. I figured the two of you could recuperate together. But Riley was part of the hallucination. I never told him I'd taken her to that house. How did you even know about Riley? Your mom told me. My mom? I hadn't told her either. How did she know? She said Jules told her. Jules? I cried. Jules has been dead for years. You know that. Besides, dogs don't... I couldn't bring myself to say that dogs couldn't talk. Your mom said she thought of Jules and somehow knew that we were meant to adopt a dog named Riley. I remembered Jules' spirit form sitting beside her in the waiting room. But that was in the hallucination. Do you believe it? I asked. In the box, Riley barked. Brady grinned. Isn't Riley the proof?
Masai corpse.
by E.J. Randolph. You won't pass the test. My brother Tarando shot me an evil grin from his side of the well-worn, scratched kitchen top. I squinted at him. Yes, I will. I dug my spoon into the oatmeal and slurped milk and cereal. Gross. Tarando scrunched his face at me. You have no manners. I jumped up and grabbed my jacket. The examiners won't care how I eat, only if I can use the Psybox. You know I can, he snorted. Once they see you in action and realize you don't need the Psybox, they'll bounce you so hard you won't have an butt anymore. Little brothers could be such a pain to big sisters. I'd learned long ago to ignore most of what he said. Mother turned from the counter where she was chopping vegetables. Tarando, watch your mouth. Devella will do fine. Tarando glared at me. I stuck my tongue out at him. Sure, the gesture was juvenile, but so was he. You're just jealous. I dashed out the door before he could respond, my ponytail swinging across my back. I was going to max this exam. I threw my leg over my rusty old Robo bike, tapped in Central Island Spaceport, and roared off. Who'd want to ride in a motorized conveyance when they could feel the wind blowing in their face and hair? I preferred this freedom. I stopped at the entrance. The spaceport stretched as far as my eyes could see. It was the biggest on the planet, Harmony, with endless rows of hangars. Every one held a spaceship that could fly to the stars. My fingertips tingled. I imagined myself roaring toward space in a sleek spaceship, and my heart beat a little faster. This Psybox could be my ticket out of dreary career in maintenance or data entry into an exciting life traveling to the stars. A big guard stepped out of a kiosk and headed toward me. I handed him my pass for the exam. His eyes narrowed. You don't look old enough. Jeez. I pulled up my credentials from my wrist computer. I was 18 and counting. His eyes flicked to my face. Yeah, my computer was an old model, but it worked. I raised my chin. I had my pride. What else could I afford? Dad was long gone, and Mom didn't make much processing insurance claims from home. He pointed to the left. Down that way, you can't miss it. There's a long line already. Just my luck. The guard went back into his little kiosk. I tapped the controls, swung to the left, and puttered past several administrative buildings. The line came into view, and I drew in a breath. At least 100 young men and women stood in a line outside a modest, white-painted, Syncrete building. A side lot held various conveyances. I slid my robo-bike next to a shiny new hovercraft. Whoever drove that would later probably check for rust marks on the side. My robo-bike might be old, but it worked well. I took it apart and oiled everything at least once every 6 months. Fortunately, the electronics were simple. If they didn't work, I got a new motherboard. Electronics were not my thing. No, I had a different talent, one that was worthless before the formation of the Psycorps, and maybe even now. Certainly one that was worthless until hostile, psychic aliens surrounded the planet Los Trundra a year ago and demanded the government provide humans for experiments. The local mediators and psychics convinced the aliens to leave, but everyone knew those mindsuckers would be back, and the next time the dangerous beings wouldn't leave so easily. It was up to the newly formed Psycorps to block them and protect humanity. Old Earth's research and development teams had come up with the Psybox. This invention could detect psychic transmissions and set up blocking frequencies. Everyone heralded the contraption as the biggest leap forward in Psywar technology in years. I snorted. If that's all it could do, what was the point? But the authorities thought it would neutralize the aliens' power. Ha! All the aliens had to do was use one of their disintegrator beams. I'd read about how they'd turned it on a communication satellite the last time they threatened humanity, and the satellite had disappeared. But no matter how ineffectual, this Psycorps was my best chance. I was one of the few who'd passed the initial screening sent to all the schools. I appraised my competition, waiting to take the test. Men and women, mostly from a variety of Navy ranks, stood with confidence, dressed in their neatly pressed uniforms. I grimaced. My clothes were faded, but clean. Mom had figured out how to get our de-wrinkler working one more time and thrown in my jeans, T-shirt, and denim jacket. My friend Marlene's husband was in the Navy and had brought home an instruction holo for the Psybox, so I knew how the device worked. She called me to check it out, and I'd watched it over and over until I was sure I could read the correct detection patterns and press the appropriate counteraction buttons. Since I was a whiz at video games, surely I'd be faster than almost anyone else. But in principle, the Psybox was not hard to operate. Every last one of these hopefuls would be able to do it. What chance did I have? Maybe I was fooling myself. The line was moving. I tried to read the faces of the hopefuls as they left the building. They were neutral. I guess no one knew whether they'd passed. I didn't need to open my mind and let their thoughts enter me. My turn came. I walked into the building. It took a moment for my eyes to adjust to the dim interior. A man and a woman sat on either side of a wooden table. A small black Psybox with 12 buttons lay in front of them. "Tvela Lotet?" The woman's voice held a question beyond that of my name. "That's me." I stood with my legs set apart and my head at a cocky angle, her lips pursed. "Do you know how this works?" Her voice dripped with condensation. "Yes, I do." "Do you have a pass?" I handed it to her. She glanced at it. "I see, a vocational school." Heat rose up my neck. The man pointed to the black box. "Pick it up." His voice was gruff. I held it in the palm of my hand. He pressed some buttons in front of him. I grinned. The first pattern was easy. I pressed the correct counterattack. He entered another set, and I responded a different group of buttons. Patterns erupted across the screen. As soon as one appeared, I zapped it. This was fun. I could do it all day. The screen went blank. The man stared at me for nearly a minute, his face betraying nothing. "You may go now. We'll let you know." The woman sat with crossed arms. No, she didn't like me. I'd done well, but that might not matter. I was not regular Navy. I came from a vocational school. I dressed in old clothes. What else did they need to know? I was not their kind. I walked out. The lot was nearly empty. I got on my robo-bike, but I didn't go home. I drove past the businesses and apartments that constituted the older part of Felice, the small town that had sprouted up in the last 50 years to cater to the Federation government and Navy personnel based on Central, and puttered by a new construction on the rim of the town, rising like mushrooms after a rain. I wrinkled my nose at the strong, musky mud sinkret odor. On top of a hill overlooking the town, I stopped. A breeze blew past me with the sweet scent of catriol trees. I sat on a flat rock and rubbed my face. If that silly box was all humans had to counter the aliens, we were in serious trouble. How strong were the aliens' inner voices? Could they break through the protective zone I projected every day to keep people's inner voices out? Those examiners didn't know it, but I was the real deal. Maybe the only potential alien hunter who had applied today, and they would probably nix my application. And if they learned about my real talent, that would be worse. Sure, on Lotusandra, psychics were respected, but that's because so many had some talent. No one was uncomfortable. But here on Central, the headquarters of the Federation Navy and Government, a psychic made waves. Their best course of action was to help the police or set up a shop. Once outed, they could never expect to be treated like a normal person. Granny had noticed my talent when I was still in my crib. I cried when sad thoughts crossed her mind, and smiled with her happy ones, no matter her expression. Over the years, she worried about me. Don't let people know. They'll be uncomfortable. They won't want to be your friend. They'll shun you. They won't understand. They'll think you do something evil if you can read their minds. I told her usually all I got were emotions. That's enough. She leveled a gaze at me. Believe me. One time on a playground when I was 5 years old, I told another little girl that I heard her thoughts in my head. She ran screaming to my mother. Her mother marched over and said she was going to report me, that officers would take me away and put me where I couldn't harm anyone. I said I was lying, and her mother scolded me, but let her daughter continue to play with me. My memories faded with the sunset, and I returned home. Mom looked up from the table. How'd it go? I shrugged. Don't know. They're going to let people know. You'll get in, she smiled at me. Mom, you're always an optimist. I kissed her cheek and slid into a chair. What are you fixing? Cutting some vegetables and potatoes for a stew. I picked up a peeler and applied it to the side of a potato. No food fabricator on our counter. Those contraptions were expensive. On the plus side, Mom was an excellent cook, and we ate better than anyone else on the block. And nothing matched the smell of food cooking on our old stove. We sat down for dinner. Toronto smirked at me. Didn't get the job, did you? Mom laid her fork down. She doesn't know yet. Mom's voice was firm. She wasn't going to allow any teasing. Toronto mumbled something under his breath. The next morning, a Federation messenger knocked on the door. I opened it, and she held out a screen. I placed my thumb in the designated spot. Report at once to the Psi-Corps. The messenger tucked the screen under her arm. I stood stock still. She smiled. Better get a move on. Oh, yes, right away. I popped into the house and bounced on my toes. Mom, I made it. She hugged me. I gotta go right away. I grabbed my jacket and hopped onto my robo-bike. This time at the entrance to the spaceport, the guard held up a screen and waved me through. Yep, I'd been entered into the facial recognition database. I was officially in. I parked and entered the building, where only two people sat at a table a day ago. office partitions divided the space and people hurried around. Did this place have a receptionist? No one noticed me standing. I pasted a smile on my face. Didn't do any good. No one seemed to have time for a newbie like me. A few minutes later, a harried young man came forward. He glanced at a screen in his hand in my face. Ah, Tvela Lotit, come with me. He turned and hurried down a hall. I followed him into a room. At least 20 people sat at desks. A man in a white uniform, trimmed with silver, stood at the front. He glanced at me. Please sit. He glanced at the wrist computer. In the future, beyond time. I sit. I sat in an empty chair near the door. He explained the functions of the cybots and handed one to each of us. He set up patterns, as in the test. I zapped them faster than anyone in the room. Ha! All those video games taught me something useful after all. The instructor watched me for several minutes. All right, turn your cyboxes in. He pointed at me. Stay for a minute. The room emptied and one instructor sat on the corner of his desk, his hands on his leg. I noticed you're the fastest in the room. I need to assign someone from the Psi-Corps to the small diplomatic delegation to a new alien society. We need to know if they're psychic. They give no indication, but this will be a good field test. I'm sure you'll see even a fleeting waveform. Was this my big chance? Blood pounded in my ears, and I nodded. Be ready tomorrow. The spaceship leaves at noon. My pulse raced, and I clasped my hand together. My big break. He glanced from my shoes to my T-shirt. We have the first of the Psi-Corps uniforms. He walked to a locker. Size? 10. He held out two white with silver trim uniforms. A bolt of lightning zigzagged across the front. I quivered. Uniforms. That made me official. I suppressed a smile. Thank you, sir, he grunted. On your way out, pick up your authorization from the front office. That'll be all. In a daze, I walked to the front office. My smile stretched my lips so hard, my cheeks hurt. I understand you have something for me. A man in a regular Navy uniform handed me two info cubes. Everything is here. The first contains your authorization as a member of the Psi-Corps and your orders attaching you to the diplomatic mission to Barnega. The second has a translation program from the Barnegans along with what little information we have about their planet, mostly orbital scans. I strode outside and packed my uniforms with care into my side pouches. I sped home, breaking the speed limit, and burst into the door. Mom, I have a mission. She clutched her apron. Where? To Barnega. Where? New alien contact. Her eyes widened, and she pressed her hand to her mouth. Don't worry. These aliens aren't supposed to be psychic. I'm along to make sure, though. The director said he will post us to embassies, legislations, and even Navy ships as soon as he thinks we're proficient with the Psybox. We need to be where psychic danger could be encountered. Her brow smoothed. I better help you get ready. I have two uniforms. I can clean one in the dry shower aboard every spaceship while I wear one. Maybe one pair of jeans and a couple of T-shirts. I don't know how formal I'll have to be. All I need is one small bag. The next day, Mom dropped me off at the spaceport entrance an hour before departure. She gave me a final hug. Write when you can. I walked into the cavernous hangar listed on my schedule. A courier spaceship sat with the gangway down. A woman at the main hatch asked my name and assigned me to my quarters. It didn't take me long to unpack. I sat on the narrow bunk, pulled out a screen, and played a video game. The intercom clicked. Prepare for departure. Strap into your seats. My room had a sturdy chair with a pull-down harness. I buckled in. Shortly, a low hum heralded ignition. The acceleration was smooth. The intercom came on, free to unstrap and move around. Time to explore. I left my quarters and walked down the passageway to a room with tables and chairs. Ah, dining room. Two men with white hair and deeply lined faces talked to each other. I continued to a lounge with comfortable couches where two women sat. Their salt and pepper hair was coiffed and their diplomatic uniforms pressed. Yikes! Everyone on this ship looked old enough to have grandchildren. One of the women looked up and frowned. I see our Psi Corps member showed up. Her voice conveyed she considered me a useless encumbrance. The established order never liked big changes. But the Psi Corps was here to stay. I wasn't going to tell them, but they'd have to get used to the new reality. It was going to be a lonely, long trip. Good thing I'd brought lots of video games and holos. 2 weeks later, the captain announced our arrival at Barnega. We landed, and he let down the gangway. My first day in an official capacity. My future all to be decided on one day. I trembled. Could I handle this? I had to. I smoothed my uniform, grabbed my Psi box, and followed the four senior diplomats to the tarmac. Fragrant flowers in bright, bold colors rimmed the spaceport. In the distance, the colored spires of a Barnegan city sparked in the violet hue of their sunlight. A small group of Barnegans, tall, spindly beings with rainbow-hued skin, greeted us. I cupped my Psi box in my palm. A blip. What? These beings were psychic. I pressed the appropriate button. Another. I tensed. Then nothing. I glanced around. Maybe only a few here were psychic. A small blip. Fine, I got it. Several more Barnegans walked toward the spaceship. The blips lengthened and increased. I pressed a series of buttons. The Barnegans looked at each other and the blips changed shape. A wave of dominating emotion spilled over me, pushing me to my knees. My fingers shaking, I pressed several buttons. If anything, the wave intensified, the Psi box completely useless. Their emotions poured into me. Never before had I encountered so much psychic force directed toward me. I was filling up like a balloon. My head bowed. I laid my hands onto the ground, holding myself up. I couldn't contain any more. It was impossible. I would burst. I forced myself to stand up and let out all those feelings towards them, as if I were a mirror. The more they threw at me, the more I reflected toward them. They stumbled backward, holding their arms over their heads. My vision turned white. They looked like they were shrinking, as if they were so small. How curious. They didn't seem at all scary now that they were so small. I took several steps forward, the ground seeming to shake with each step. I held up my arms. This will stop right now. They tilted their heads up as if I'd grown to giant proportions. Please, one in the front row screeched, and my wrist computer translated. We're sorry. We won't do it again. Okay. I took several deep breaths, letting the emotion dissipate. They rose to their feet and bowed their heads. We didn't know you had the power. We will give you all the honor you deserve. The Federation diplomatic delegation stood frozen, mouths agape. The words coming from the Barnegans and their actions couldn't have made any sense. I turned to the lead diplomat. I think everything will go smoothly from now on. The first field experience with the Psi box was a success. The locals do have psychic abilities. The box countered their efforts to take over our minds. I'd used my own psychic abilities, but would the diplomats believe I'd used the box? My whole future depended on their misperceptions. They had to believe in the efficacy of the Psi box and my proficient use of the device. The head of the Federation mission nodded. We'll recommend the new device in our first report to headquarters. Phew. I smiled at the Psi box in my hand. No doubt about it. I loved technology.